Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night. All day.
Don Fry, it's a goddamn honor and a pleasure.
Hey, partner, thank you. You know, like I said earlier, first only time we met, I insulted you.
I don't remember that.
It was down there in Alabama, right?
That was the early days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, number 12.
Oh, USC 12. That was my first one.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Well, we were backstage, and, you know, they introduced us, and I says, you know, do you know who this guy is? They said, and I says, yeah, he plays that real dumb guy on the news radio show.
But that's not an insult.
You look so hurt. Then I find out, you know, your character is really actually part of who you are. And
it's part of the problem. It's very close to who I am, unfortunately.
I've been watching you. Man, you're a smart bastard, man. I'm impressed.
I have a good memory. I'm not that smart, but I have a good memory.
You know what the hell's going on in a lot of stuff.
I know. Some things.
The Bob Lazar stuff? Oh, I mean, that's impressive.
Are you interested in UFOs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of folks in Arizona are interested in UFOs. They visit there quite a bit,
yeah.
Seems like.
Yeah, there's the house that I have. It was built, I guess, the guy who built it so his wife could watch the UFOs over at the mountain there.
Wow, that's a high-maintenance lady.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they all are, aren't they?
But imagine that. What kind of house you want, honey? I want a house where I watch UFOs.
Yeah.
I need an observation deck.
That's basically it. It was like a bunker.
Was it?
Yeah. Half of it's in the ground and then all the block, you know, you got the big 16x8 block and they're all filled with cement.
A lot of weird houses like that. There's a house for sale in Arizona right now. It used to be Steven Seagal's house. It might still be his house. He's selling it, but it's bulletproof. It's got bulletproof glass. It's like a compound.
That guy's a goof.
He's a silly man.
He's a fucking goof. Beyond silly.
He's a silly man.
Yeah, I mean, he believes that shit, you know, who he is. You know?
I don't know what he believes and what he's just bullshitting. It's hard to tell, you know?
Oh, you can't bullshit that good. I mean, he's a lousy actor. He's a lousy actor. How the hell can you pretend to be that, you know?
I mean, that's his hustle, right? His hustle is that he's just like martial arts guy, but you know he's really good at Aikido.
I'm sure
you watch
sure.
those demonstrations.
You know what, if I get a couple pro wrestlers to be my ookies, you know, yeah. They make me look like $1 million.
That's true. That is what happens, right? They're all compliant.
Mm-hmm.
Don, how did you, when did you, you started out, was like UFC 8, was that your first fight?
No, it was first in the UFC. I fought before, UFC. Yeah.
You fought boxing and kickboxing before that, right?
No kickboxing. I did boxing. I think I had 8 fights, and I think I was 2-6 or 2-5-1, I don't know, because I fought my first two as Don Fry, and I won those. And then I had an argument with my trainer, and so we split. And then, I fought under J.R. Fry.
Why'd you change your name?
Oh, that was my name growing up. I was junior, so J.R. Oh. And that's how I was in, you know, junior high school. And then, you know, when my dad and mom called me, and then I think I changed my name because of contractual, you know, things.
Oh, you had some deal with the manager?
Right.
There's a lot of those sneaky deals, huh?
Yeah, but that was more at the trainer. And, you know, I don't know if that was because they were really good guys. Art Martori was my money guy who, you know, they the two Munoz, Mike Munoz and his father Al, brought me to Art. Art wrestled at ASU back in the late 60s, and Art, he's a billionaire, you know, and so he was interested in, I mean, he basically funds ASU wrestling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Out of his pocket, yeah. And he's done so much for amateur wrestling in the U.S. I mean, he's like the top dog, because he used to have what's called Sunkist Wrestling Team. And so that was his baby, and he steamrolled that. And then, like I said, the Munoz brothers, or Mike and his dad, took me to art. So I just give it a shot. After he called, the coach at Okie State, Jose, to double check on me, you know.
So did you started out wrestling? Did you wrestle as a young boy?
No, sir. No,
when did you start wrestling?
As a freshman in high school.
And then when did you box?
When I got out of college.
Oh, so most of it was, you know, that's fairly late in life to box, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why I was 2 and 6.
So when did you hear about the UFC?
I was a fireman, you know. I just did the boxing and then got out and started doing odd jobs for, you know, a year and a half. And then my wife at that time, we had a couple horses, you know, and being a college wrestler, you got a bit of an ego on you. So I look at, well, hell, I could do that. So start going around with a farrier named Stoney Newfang, and then Stoney got me interested. Then I got tired of that. Wasn't really making any good money, but, you know, for the time, he's giving me $5 a horse, you know, teach me, you know, to pull the shoes, shape the shoe, you know, and all that good stuff. Well, he did the technical work on the hooves. And then I said, you know, somebody told me about being a fireman, about, you know, working 10 days a month, you know, I had a wrestler. Right. So, hell, that's a job for me, you know. 10 days a month, I can do that.
You're doing the 24-hour shifts? Yeah. You stay there at the firehouse? Yeah.
Yeah, so I got on the phone, called up all the cities in the state of Arizona. Nobody was hiring. So I called up Santa Fe, New Mexico. They said, yeah, we're going to run a test. And so I went over there and tested and passed the test. And then I went to my buddy, Jerry Pagenbaugh. He's the guy who got me into wrestling when I was in high school. Can I borrow your lighter, please?
Yeah. There you go. There you go. I'll leave that over there for you.
Thank you, sir. Bring your man. And so then I went and stayed at Jerry's house in Santa Fe, and I went through their, I think it was like a 6-month or more academy, you know.
In the fire department?
Yeah.
Really? 6 months?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a hell of an academy. It really was.
And so from there, you thought about fighting?
No, I had already fought.
No, but I mean in the UFC.
Oh, no. From there, we were there a year and a half. Couldn't afford to live there. You know, either in Santa Fe, you're either real rich or real poor. Mm. You know, this was 30 years ago, so right. I don't know how it is now. But
probably similar.
Probably. Like the whole country now, right?
Yeah. It's supposed to be nice, though, Santa Fe. A lot of friends from there.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You never been?
No, never been.
Oh, you got to go.
I don't even think I've been to New Mexico except driving through once.
Really?
Yeah.
Where'd you drive through at?
I was a kid. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't? Obviously, you haven't gotten to see John Jones in it.
No, Jackson Winklejohn. I want to go down there and check out the gym, though.
How come you haven't?
Just a busy man, Don Fry. Just a busy man. There's a lot of places I want to go.
Yeah.
Never been to North Dakota either.
I have.
I bet you have.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I don't know why I said North Dakota.
I saw the lights, man. That was cool.
Oh, the Northern Lights?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see that.
Oh, yeah. That is so cool, man. Yeah,
that's pretty wild.
Yeah, I did that. After I had my first neck surgery back in 2000, me and a couple buddies went did the Amsterdam thing, you know, and that was real cool. We saw the lights up there.
What'd you have done on your neck? You have it fused?
Yeah, I had broken it doing pro wrestling and worked on it for a year and a half, not knowing, you know.
Oh, but, Jesus.
Yeah, but I'd lost so much muscle in the right arm. You know, and so they fixed it, and I had a really nice, I can't remember her name, and I'm talking a lot. I never talk this much.
That's what a podcast is all about.
Joe, I don't talk this much in a month, man.
Well, we can take breaks.
You've done a hell of a, Must be all the must have got the right combination of pain pills today to win.
So, out of all the injuries that you ever got in your fighting career, was the pro wrestling injuries the worst?
Yeah.
Pro wrestling is probably one of the hardest things that a guy can do athletically.
Yeah.
Because those guys do it every fucking night. All the guys that I've had in here, you know, The Undertaker, Diamond Dallas Page, all these guys, like every one of them, when they tell you their stories, you go, Jesus Christ, Jake the Snake. Those guys are so banged up.
Yeah. I'm
trying to get Ric Flair.
Woo! Oh, I love Rick. He's
working
so
on it,
funny.
Rick.
Yeah, he's so funny.
Oh, he's a goddamn legend. So when you first heard about the UFC, so you were a firefighter then, or
like I said, we were in Santa Fe for a year and a half, and then couldn't afford to live there, and so I got on the phone and said, "Well, shit, you know, we still had horses." And still paying farrier, so, well, shit, I could do that. So I found Oklahoma Horseshoeing School in Okie City, and so I moved my wife back home to my parents' house, you know, and I went to Oklahoma Horseshoeing School for their 12-week program.
Oh, wow.
And so I did that, and then when I came back to Arizona, Sierra Vista, hooked up with a guy named... Tyler Basinger. Tyler is a magician. He's a farrier. Just a magician. And he paid me $5 a horse, you know, and fed me lunch. And, and you know, so I was learning how to shoe horses from him, you know, doing an apprenticeship, starting my own business. I got on as a firefighter reserve. You know, the place called Fry Fire Department, you know, FRY, no relation. The old man had an outpost store outside of Fort Huachuca, you know, 150 years ago, and also a whorehouse. You
know? This is like old school Western shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so then I had, sometime I worked at a psych facility too, you know.
A site facility?
Psychological.
Oh, yeah. Psychological facility?
Yeah.
What'd you do there, like restrain patients?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
what's harder, horseshoeing or restraining patients?
Horseshoeing, I broke a kid's arm, so, you know, just a headlock. So the, you know, they did a breakout where, you know, 20 or 30 of them run off, and then you got to herd them back in. And
really?
Well, yeah, and a couple of them act out, and one of the guys... had the kid restrained from, he had him from behind, had his arms pinned, kid started slamming his head into face. So I just walked up to the headlock, and we landed, snapped his arm.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that kind of put a damper on things.
Yeah. Was that the end of your restraining patience?
Yeah, that was in the end of that career.
So how does it make its way to the UFC? Do you remember when you found out about the UFC?
Yeah, then I think that was still a year or two before.
So this is like 92, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, and then I started doing judo, you know, because I needed something to do, you know.
Right.
You know, you're 22, 24 years old, you know, you used to be a college athlete, you know, you still walk around with an erection, you know?
Right, I understand.
And so I started doing judo and advanced really quickly in that. And, you know, so I got on the Bisbee Fire Department in 94.
Bisbee, 92. Arizona?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. Shout out to Doug Stanhope. 92. He's the king of Bisbee.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
I met him one time.
Did you?
Yeah, at the airport.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he says, you're a firefighter. I used to be. Shit, this was probably 15, 18 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And, where the hell are we now?
So you were talking about when you first heard about the UFC.
Yeah, 92 I got on with the Bisbee Fire.
Right.
And then we were sitting there watching something on TV and saw Dan, clip of Dan.
Dan Severn?
Uh-huh. And then he was doing some kind of bodyguard work with that gal who works. Whoa, oh, fuck me. I'm bad at names sometimes. I had a stroke, you know, a few years ago.
You did?
A hemorrhagic stroke, yeah, after a surgery.
Oh, shit.
So I get lost sometimes. Fuck me. You can edit this.
Yeah, right? It doesn't matter anyway. So Dan was doing bodyguard work.
Yeah, for Robin from, who's a radio guy in New York
Robin
City?
Robin Quivers?
Yeah.
Howard Stern?
Right, right.
Oh, really? No
yeah.
shit.
In his gray t-shirt, yeah.
Wow.
Everybody's in suits and Dan's in his gray t-shirt. And so they, you know, then we saw Dan fight. And I called him up and said, fuck. You know, I said, Dan, this is Don Fry. Remember me? He goes, yeah, what are you doing, Don? I was just playing fireman, playing horseshoer, you know. I was just, I said, this UFC stuff, can you get me in on it? And he says, yeah. So he ended up getting me some fights, probably about 5 or 6 fights, you know, around the country. And, you know, the check's still in the mail. You know,
This pre-UFC?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you fought MMA before the UFC?
Oh, it was warehouse fighting. Yeah. It was MMA. It was an
right,
HB.
Right. So, right, NHB is what they called it back then. Yeah, no holds barred.
Right.
Yeah. So you wear shoes, you do whatever you want.
Yeah,
was it bare knuckle?
Yeah, you want. Yeah, yeah.
In your day, and even in the UFC 8, you were still allowed to fight bare knuckle.
Yeah. But I wore gloves because I hit hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
smart.
Gloves aren't made to protect your face.
Right.
They're made to protect my hands.
Who's the first guy to wear gloves in the UFC?
Tank.
Was it Tank? Yeah. Smart. Yeah. Smart move.
He hits hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy shit, I remember your fight with Tank. What a fucking fight that was. My God.
You know, and it didn't make top 10 of the 1-round fights.
Oh, I have no idea why it doesn't. Well, it's because there's so many great fights. It's arbitrary who makes top 10, but I think it should have been in there. That was a classic.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows anything about UFC 100 and Be a War. You know?
I do.
Joe, you're a student.
Shit.
And you were there.
I was there.
But the new fans.
Yeah, they should go back because that's the history of the sport. I always tell people we knew more about martial arts after 4 years of the UFC than had been done in 400 years.
Right.
We knew more. We knew what worked and what didn't work. We saw so many different things. So many different things. Like, by the time 97 rolled around, they had figured out. So first of all, they realized wrestling is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Is the most important thing.
Well, it's like a street fight.
Yep.
2.5 hours every day. You know,
right.
It really is.
It is, yeah. And it's just the ability to take a guy down. If you look at, somebody posted it. It might have been Adam Hunter on his page. I think it was on his Instagram page. He posted the amount of champions per discipline. You know, it showed like jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, all the different, and then wrestling is number one.
Right.
Number one out of all the different disciplines, that's the most important discipline.
Well, it's the hardest thing to do. Because you're doing it every day in high school, every day in college. And there's no excuses, you know.
Yep. And the most mentally tough, too.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, they're cutting weight. They're cutting weight the day of the event. Mm-hmm. They're competing dehydrated and exhausted. And wrestlers, amongst all athletes that I've ever met, take pride in being miserable.
Yeah.
They really do. Yeah, here it is. It is Adam. Adam Hunter put it up there. Look at that. 28 professional champions from wrestling. The second place is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The third place is boxing and then kickboxing. Below that, Muay Thai. And then 2 Taekwondo and 1 Karate. It's amazing.
Right, but all right, but the Jiu-Jitsu, how many of those champions were in the first few years? I mean, cause,
right.
Excuse me. As soon as we figured it out.
Well, now everybody does everything. But
right.
I still think that base is the most important base, the wrestling base. Because
yeah.
a dominant wrestler, a guy like a Daniel Cormier, a guy like a John Jones, a guy who's an elite wrestler, they have that advantage over everybody. If shit gets weird, they could take the guy down at any time.
Right.
Or if they just decide to impose their will, they could take the guy down. Or if you want to take them down because they're striking, they're out striking you, you can't because they're wrestling so
good.
Yeah,
it's
just such a giant advantage.
Sprawl and snap your head into the mat.
Yeah. But you were one of the first guys to enter the UFC that had, that looked like real polished skills. when you came out, guns blazing. You won your first fight by first round knockout. And I remember watching on TV, I'm like, that motherfucker can fight.
Oh,
like,
because
you're seeing people that a lot of times you're seeing folks that probably shouldn't have been there. Like, there was back in the day, like, you remember the early days, there was guys that were like, they trained in ninjutsu, and they were practicing like karate chopping people on the top of the heads and all kinds of wacky shit.
Shit you never heard of.
Yeah.
Right?
But when I saw you, I was like, okay, that guy's an actual fighter. And when you see the way you were throwing punches and your wrestling ability and and you were a good size, too. You weren't too big. You weren't too small.
Right.
You probably weighed, like, what, 210, something like that?
Yeah, it was 05, 205, but I said 210 because...
Sounded better?
Well, I knew I was going to gain weight through that year, you know, because... Yeah.
That was the plan?
Yeah, I was a fireman, and I was shoeing horses in Arizona. You know, you're working 6-7 days a week, you know, and I knew as soon as I gave it up, ten pounds was going to come on real fast.
Right, right. And everybody was chasing. That was when Mark Coleman in UFC 12 was when Mark Coleman became the champion when he beat Dan Severn.
Right.
And Mark was 265 pounds.
He was a monster.
He was a fucking gorilla. Like people forget, he had everybody gaining weight.
Yeah.
Everybody gained weight when they saw the hammer. They're like, fuck.
They got no choice.
Yeah, you had to. They shot that power double. And that was the headbutt days, too.
Yeah, yeah.
When Mark would get on top of you and get control of you and start smashing his head into your face, those were quick nights.
It wasn't fun, yeah.
No.
Because Dan started that, and then I did it, and then Mark did it.
Yep.
You know, and somehow Mark became the grandfather of it. So I guess I'm a great grandfather, Dan's great great grandfather. You know?
Of ground and pound.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a real wake-up call for a lot of people. But so was the jiu-jitsu, right? When Hoist Gracie tapped Dan Severn, that was a wake-up call for a lot of people. Like, how the fuck is he doing that? Off his back?
Oh, yeah.
With his legs?
That was... The Gracies, they changed martial arts the world over.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I think they're the most important family in the history of all martial arts.
Yeah. I mean, that was their plan, you know?
And
it was a great plan. The whole thing... What was brilliant about it, it was like a paid infomercial.
Yeah, it
was. You paid for.
Yep.
You know?
Right,
you paid $20, you know. You laugh at it now. Back then, 20 bucks was a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, you paid $20 to sit there and watch an infomercial. But it was brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, so exciting.
When you had your first fight, in the UFC, once it was over, once you won, were you like, okay, this is what I'm doing now?
Yeah, yeah. I won that, and I'm like, you know, I love this. This is fun. Back to being competitive, you know. Because my athletic career was like this, you know. It really was.
Ups and downs.
Yeah, you know, I'd get burnt out and walk away, you know.
Right,
and you get a real short attention span, I guess, you know.
But when you saw what the UFC was, where you could take guys down or you could stand up and them strike, it was such a unique thing. That just appealed to you?
Yeah, because I wasn't afraid to get punched in the face.
Right.
You know?
That helps.
Yeah, it does.
For sure.
And, yeah, because there's a lot of wrestlers, they go in there and bam, you get hit in the bridge of the nose, it changes your opinion real fast, everything, don't it, Joe?
Yeah, your eyes water up.
Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable feeling. Now, did you think at that point in time that this was something that this was going to be a real sport? Because a lot of people weren't sure if it was going to last back then.
Right.
Like UFC 8, when you entered, it was like, it was still kind of crazy. When I came around was UFC 12, and they were banned from pay-per-view on everything except DirecTV.
Right.
DirecTV was the only people that had them on. You couldn't get it on cable anymore because boxing was in cahoots with John McCain, Budweiser, and all that stuff. And they were,
That guy's dirty.
Was he dirty?
Oh, yeah, he's dirty. Dang. Yeah.
He's gone now. Rest in peace.
Yeah. He was a paid boxing advisor to Don King. You know, the guy didn't know what the fuck. He was dead. No. You know, so when this came around, it was beaten boxing, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And so Don King said, hey, put the boots to this, you know.
Yep. That's what happened.
I mean, his wife, you know, was the head of Henley Distributing, you know. Henley Beer. Budweiser Beer. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. But I knew he did something with Budweiser, and that had a big impact on
him. He married Budweiser,
That had a big impact on how the UFC was, whether or not it was legal, because they started banning it from everywhere.
Yeah, that was the big joke, is after the fights, you can go to the hospital or you can go to the after party. But number three is you can go to jail, too.
Right,
We didn't know. We didn't know if we were going to come out and get slapped in cuffs
right.
and hauled away, or they're going to let us finish the event and then arrest everybody.
Do you remember when Dan fought Ken Shamrock? I think it was in Denver, and they told him they couldn't punch his face in closed fists? There was some kind of crazy law. Where they couldn't punch.
No, that's Detroit.
Was it Detroit?
Yes, sir.
Was it Michigan?
UFC, UFC 9. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And everybody was going, what the fuck is going on? Like, they were told before the event that they can't punch with closed fists.
Right.
There was so many crazy rules like that. The first event I did was supposed to be in New York. It was supposed to be, I think it was supposed to be in Albany. Albany or Buffalo? I think Albany.
Buffalo.
Was it Buffalo?
Maybe Albany. Maybe.
But it was upstate New York somewhere, and then it got moved last minute to Dothan, right, Alabama, right. And that's where I met you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was UFC 12. That's when Vitor made his debut, fought Trey Teligman, and that was when Mark Coleman fought Dan. That was there was a lot of great fights on the card.
Yo, Trey Teligman was tough. I mean, to be missing a breast,
Yeah, one pack, built like a tank.
Breast,
breast.
Sorry, Dre.
Scott, you fought Scott Ferozzo too. That was a tournament that night. Vitor won the tournament. 19 years old.
Yeah. Amazing.
Lightning bolt that guy was.
He was amazing.
You believe he's gonna fight Oscar De La Hoya?
Really?
Yeah, he's gonna have a boxing match September 11th with Oscar De La Hoya. You gotta think that guy was fighting. I mean, well, so was Oscar. I mean, Oscar was a world champion in 97. And here it is, 97, and Vitor makes his Octagon debut. What's that?
Was he even born in 97?
Oscar? Yeah. Oscar's in his 40s.
No,
Vitor?
Vitor.
Yeah. Vitor was 19 then. Yeah. So Oscar's a little older than Vitor, I believe. I believe Oscar's like 48 or something like that. It's crazy seeing these guys still getting after it after all these years.
I'd like to.
You'd like to?
Yeah.
If your body would hold up?
I'm going to go down there to Columbia and do the bioaccelerator, And the plan on that is do that and hopefully, make a comeback,
Really?
Shit, yeah, Joe.
I love it.
Shit, yeah. I mean, I'd love to fight Ngannou.
Ngannou?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He's amazing, yeah.
Wouldn't it be better to fight someone your age?
Why? They don't have the belt, do they?
No. So you'd want to fight someone with the belt, even at your age.
Yeah.
That's why you're Don Fry.
Yeah.
Because you think like that. Yeah.
If I can get my back fixed up, I'm there, puppy.
What's going on with your back right now?
Hell, I've had probably five or six major back surgeries, and then probably related 15 to 20 related, because infections and things like that.
Jesus.
And and the infections tried to get me a couple of times. And
staff, MRSA,
staff.
Yeah.
I had
scary
one.
Shit.
One time I had it inside the spinal cord. Or twice, actually, twice. And the
Is
damn,
this your back?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Don, that looks like a roller coaster ride. How many discs do you have fused?
I don't know if it's 11 discs or 11 vertebrae.
How many vertebrae does a human have?
20-some.
So you got half of them are fused. Wow, give me some pictures. Let me see these. Look at that lower left. Oh, Jesus Christ. Look at that lower left one of your back. Holy fuck, Don.
Yeah, it's gonna put a zipper on it.
Jesus Christ. That is crazy. So they just went in and did the whole back all at once. That's some Wolverine shit.
No, what happened is...
Whoa! So that's the infection. Is that why you
that
got
was
the pump?
After the infection, yeah. They're draining it, and they had to leave it open for a week.
So the
plastic surgeon could figure out how to connect it, because I was out of connective tissue. It was all scar tissue. So
oh my God.
He left it open for a week. He had to cut it, cut it, pull, you know.
Wow, that is wild. So is this mostly from pro wrestling or is it from everything?
I would say everything. I mean, you know, as a fireman, as a horseshoer, you know.
Jamie, go back three pictures. The one that shows the neck and the back, that one. Look at that. So you got a few that are just hanging in there, and then yeah. You got your neck fused. That is goddamn wild.
Well, that goes all the way down the crack of my ass. You know, my ass crack goes from my balls up to my shoulder blades.
Wow, that is crazy. So it's just all scar tissue in there and bolts and screws and plates. And
yeah, so if I go down there to Columbia and get, you know, the stem cell.
You might have to live there for a few years. Just have them shoot you up every day. Yeah. Who knows? I'm a big fan of stem cells. They can do some wild shit down there.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guys have gone to that bioaccelerator thing and that facility down there and had a really good result.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, look at me. I'm giddy. I can hardly sit still.
Have you had any stem cells before?
No, sir.
They can do amazing stuff, but you know there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, you know they're going to do my shoulders too because I have partial replacements in my shoulders.
What do you got going on there? Like resurfaced?
No, just wore them out. You know,
you said partial replacements.
Like, yeah.
Did they resurface the shoulders? Is that what they did?
Yes, sir. Just you know, cut the end off. You know, and then stuck the one thing and just. With the knob and the other side is all natural bone. You know?
Right, yeah.
Because they said if they do a full replacement, you can't use them. They're no good. So,
oh, really? You can't put stress on them?
Yeah, so I said, the hell with that. I want to do something.
Right. Are you able to work out now?
Not yet.
No?
I just had this done. This right one was done in 17, I think, December 17th. This one just got done last December.
When did you get your first surgery after fighting? How many years in were you?
After fighting?
Like, you mean during fighting, during your career?
Oh, during fighting.
Yeah.
Hell.
Because everybody's had a surgery.
Right.
I mean, I've never met a single fighter. Maybe I have and I forgot. But most fighters that I know has had something blow out.
Right.
You know?
Well, let's see. I think in 2001 was when they did my neck.
So that was the first one.
Yeah, because I did that from pro wrestling to war. You know, because I did the UFC in 96. And then in 97, I was hired by Antonio Inoki and Masa Saito to do New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Reagan's. He's a cousin of Brock Lesnar, second cousin. So he called up Jeff, you know, because Brad took fourth in the Olympics in 76 in Greco-Roman.
Mm.
And then he was on the team in 80 when he was going to be the gold medal winner. And he had beaten the gold medal winner in 76, but they were doing the point system then, you know. So he got screwed out of them.
What's the point system?
You get so many points for advancing, so many points for a pin, so many points for, you know, a point win.
So
you
they
know.
Changed it?
Yeah, so they went back to the normal. I mean, amateur wrestling fucks around so much, you know, with the rules, and so does judo.
Have you paid attention to the PFL at all?
No, I have not.
I was watching that today. I was watching it in the gym while I was working out. And they have, it's interesting, they have real good fighters over there. Some real good fighters. But they have some wacky thing that they do where you get a certain amount of points for a submission.
Right.
Certain amount of points for a knockout. And then you move ahead.
Right.
But it's like you're scoring.
Yeah.
So it goes, and they call it the playoffs. And then you're moving towards this eventual $1 million tournament that they put together. But
that's how they're doing it with judo and with amateur wrestling.
Yeah, but their thing is weird. The way they have it set up, like if you win in the first round, you get extra points.
Right,
if you win,
right.
You know, if you miss weight, you lose a point. So they have it's a hard to follow. So even for someone like me who's a big fan of the sport, I can't follow their system. I'm like, you got great fighters, but you're confusing the shit out of people with this wacky system.
Yeah. Well, you miss weight, your ass to be gone.
I think that's a good call. I think you should not be able to fight, or I think there should be some major penalty because a lot of these guys are choosing to miss weight.
Right.
You know? They're choosing to miss weight.
Absolutely.
They're like, I don't want to do this. Fuck it. And then, but you could, but you know that's going to drain you. Mm-hmm. And so they choose to come in a pound or two heavy, and then they feel a lot better the next day.
Right.
Because, there's, you know better
they
than anybody.
They have a better chance of winning, too.
Yeah, a better chance of winning because they're not as drained. A lot of these guys are cutting. I wish there was no weight cutting. That's what I really wish. I wish you got down to a healthy weight and you fought at whatever weight you're at, and they just figured out what the weight classes could be to make it so that there's more options.
Well,
make it every
a
10 pounds
pound range or what?
Something like that. Like boxing has it, but I think with MMA, I think the weight classes are too wide. You know, you got 85 and then you got 205. That's crazy. That's 20 pounds. To have two weight classes separated by 20 pounds is just fucking nuts to me. I think it should be. I would love it if it was 5 pounds, but I think 10 pounds is fine. 10 pounds is workable. You know, you could adjust your diet, adjust your training habits, do a little extra running, whatever you got to do to.
Right.
But more than that,
then you get into what happened in pro boxing. You end up having 80 champions. You know?
That's what the argument against it is, right? But the thing about pro boxing is, you know, you have all these different organizations. You got the WBC, WBA, IBO,
right.
You know, all that shit. With the UFC, if they just kept it in the UFC, just with the UFC and made all these different weight classes, one every 10 pounds, I think is very doable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it'd be a lot more opportunities for guys to go up in weight or down in weight and fight, you know, have champion versus champion fights. Like when Israel Adesanya fought Yan Blachowicz. You know, you got your middleweight champion fighting your light heavyweight champion. The size difference is so big.
Right.
It's a giant size difference.
Well, that's why they need a super heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so too. Yeah.
I mean, that's why cut it off at 285? That's
265.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
You have so many good fighters that are heavier. I mean,
Rulon Gardner.
Yeah.
Like Rulon Gardner is like a 300 pounder.
Oh, Erickson. Tom
Erickson. Tom Erickson.
You know?
Yeah, he was like a 300 pounder,
yeah,
right? He was. When in his prime, people forgot about Tom Erickson.
He's frightening.
Holy shit, he was terrifying. Elite wrestler who could knock you the fuck out, and he was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved like a cat.
Yeah.
When in his prime, Tom Erickson was one of the scariest specimens to ever compete in MMA.
Yeah.
He was a fucking gigantic man who moved so good.
But he's another one that didn't like getting punched in the face, though.
Yeah, who does?
I kind of enjoy it.
Well, you're an unusual guy, Don Fry.
Yeah.
So when you first fought and you decided, okay, this is what I'm going to do. When the UFC was taken off, you stayed in the UFC for a few years and then went over to Pride. When did you find out about Pride?
No, I stayed in the UFC 1 year.
Only 1 year?
Yeah, 96. And then I went to pro wrestling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So all your fights in the UFC were only 1 year?
1 year.
Wow, no shit.
Yeah. And none of them went the distance.
Yeah, that's incredible. And then from New Japan Pro Wrestling, so how'd you find out about
then
that?
Then I went to Pride.
Did they contact you from the UFC?
Yes, sir. They contacted me. Yes, sir. Because God bless Ken Shamrock, you know, he had the deal.
Right, he had a connection over there.
Well, no, they offered him a deal to go over there and be a bad guy American shooter style, you know.
Mm.
And so he took that contract, went to WWE,
right,
and showed them, and they matched it or bettered it, you know. And then that left New Japan Pro Wrestling hanging. So that's when Masa Saito called Brad Reagans. Brad Reagans called Jeff Blatnick. God bless late Jeff Blatnick.
Yeah. What a
he
great
recommended
guy
he
was.
Me. Yeah.
What a great guy Jeff Blatnick
was.
He gave me some great advice when I first started working for the UFC. Just such a sweetheart of a guy. How did he pass?
Was it heart?
Was it a heart attack?
I think so.
Sweetheart of a guy, though.
He was a good guy.
Really good guy. And an elite wrestler, too. And just fantastic.
Gold medal.
Yeah. And fantastic doing commentary because of that experience.
He was, like you, he was a student of the sport.
Yeah,
he
really was.
He got hired and studied it and, you know, he's amazing.
Yeah, he was an amazing guy. And so you go over to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and that's when you were getting most of your injuries, you think?
Yes, sir. Because I was, I was trying to be Ric Flair and Terry Funk, you know, and they didn't want that, you know. They wanted more of a Bruiser Brody type thing, right. You know.
They wanted you the badass American cowboy.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. And not to take the bumps, you know. Right. And I ended up taking bumps that I shouldn't have taken. So
that's the thing about pro wrestling, right? People think, oh, it's fake. Yeah, listen, the fucking those slams are not fake.
No.
You're really getting slammed, you know? Those picking guys up over your head, slamming them down, them picking you up, all the different the collisions that you guys would have with each other night after night after night. And is their circuit over there similar to the circuit here? Would you do a lot of different shows, or are they mostly televised? How'd they do it over there?
Yeah, you did a lot of dark matches, you know. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's how they keep the money coming in.
Right. They do arenas just
right.
like they do in America.
Right.
Yeah, people don't know if you're not a fan of pro wrestling. Those guys are working hundreds of nights a week, or a year, rather. They're working, you know. Dallas Page was telling me that he, you know, sometimes did 200 plus shows a
right.
year.
Some guys do 300. You
it's
know?
Incredible. Yeah. If you stop and think about that.
365 days in a year.
Yeah. You know? It's crazy.
You're getting whacked, you know.
Most of them. Yeah. You're working more days than you're not working.
Right.
Which is just.
And the travel.
Yeah, and the travel. So you're exhausted all the time, you're jet lagged, and you're getting slammed.
Yeah, and you got to stay in shape, and you got to eat. And it's a work. It's a real, you know, it's a real living.
Now, when you went over there, did you have to go to pro wrestling school? Did they train you how to do it?
Brad Reagan's trained me.
He did?
Yeah, yes, sir. And Brad, you know, phenomenal. He's a phenomenal athlete, you know. And like I said, you know, he took fourth in the 76 Olympics in Montreal when he should have won. And then he would have won the 80 Olympics, you know. And then he ended up, he got out, you know, and he trained Jeff Blatnick, you know, because they were tight. And since Brad stepped away, you know, all the concentration was on Jeff.
And how did you go from New Japan Pro Wrestling to Pride?
Ego.
Ego, yeah.
Yeah, I saw Mark Coleman win, you know. And I said, mother, you know. I said, that's nonsense. That should be me, you know. Stupid.
So what year was that? What year was your first Pride fight?
Hell, partner. First, 01.
01?
Yeah, it was.
That was the glory days.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks after 9/11. I think it was either 23rd or 28th.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And I went in there, you know, with, I told my parents, find me a flag, you know, give it to the guys when they come over. And my mother-in-law made those shorts for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, and then I says, you know, go in with the national anthem. You know?
Nice.
Oh, it was amazing, you know, walking at the flag, have a national anthem. It was cool.
Look at you there. Don Fry, 20 years ago. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it's, jeez. Is it, what year is this?
That fight in the lower corner, the Takayama fight, that was one of the craziest fucking moments in the history of mixed martial arts, when you and Takayama were just slamming each other in the head over and over and over again.
God bless him, man.
Jesus Christ, that fight. Yeah. See if you could just pull up that exchange, because in all the history of the sport, that is one of the most iconic exchanges of any two, because you couldn't believe it was happening, and you couldn't believe you guys kept doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you should have been where I was at.
I mean, this fight was so fucking bananas. I mean, you just walk towards each other, and just this fucking exchange is like a movie exchange. In the tie-up, you're both hitting each other with right hands. I mean,
it's actual speed.
What in the fuck is that? How the hell did you guys do that?
Well, if you go back, you see I slip. So I grab him, you know, because I slipped. I had to grab his neck to keep from falling. And so he just stayed there, and I stayed there.
Just nuts. I mean, I've never seen anything like that before or since. That was while that was happening, and you just slamming right hands into each other like that. What was going through your head?
I was like, what the hell's keeping this guy up?
He was probably thinking the same thing about you.
But I hit hard, Joe. I hit hard.
Yeah, you do. You know? Yeah. You hit him with some fucking haymakers.
Oh, man. And I couldn't believe he was taking them. And I was like, starting to scare the hell out of me.
Was that one of those 80,000 seat shows? One of those gigantic ones they did?
I think it was only 45. Small show.
a medium show. Because they did some Saitama Super Arena shows where it was just insanity.
Oh, we did Tokyo Dome. I did Antonio Inoki's retirement match.
Oh, yeah?
Tokyo Dome, 70,000. So they sold that out, and then they sold 5,000 standing tickets, you know.
Wow.
They got permission from the fire department to do that. So I did that, and then they did the National Soccer Arena, you know, for Pride K1 New Year's Eve event.
Oh, wow.
That's when Jerome Lobano knocked me on my ass.
Yeah, you had that one kickboxing fight against him. That's a crazy deal to take a kickboxing fight against one of the great kickboxers of all time.
Yeah, yeah. And
was that an ego deal too?
Yeah, ego. And well, the thing is, the deal was we were supposed to do an MMA fight. Yeah,
and then he backed out of that.
I don't know what happened, but just man,
never happened.
There's a lot of things that happened, Joe, that I'm finding out now. You know, 20 years later, that the two scumbags that were my agent at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so they made some backdoor deals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
That's the sport, right? The sport, yeah, that's... Prize fighting. There's always going to be scumbags.
Prize fighting is full of shit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching this, The Kings documentary on Showtime. Have you seen it?
No, I just found out about it yesterday.
Oh, it's fucking amazing. It's amazing. It's so good. It's all about Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, Thomas Hearns, and Marvin Hagler. It's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's so good. And it makes you remember, like, man, those days were wild.
Well, they had the one Once We Were Kings, mm-hmm. you know, about the heavyweight guys.
Yeah. Yeah, this is just about those four guys and, like, the, you know, the matches that they had with each other.
Well, yeah. The Once We Were Kings were about Ali, Foreman, Frazier, mm-hmm. Norton,
yep.
and yep. Holmes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are animals there. You know.
Yeah, my God. Amazing fights.
I loved Hagler.
Oh, my God. He's my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. I loved Hagler. It broke my heart when I finally freaking passed.
Yeah,
man,
that was a rough one. That was a rough one. That made me real sad. He was, when I was a kid, he was my idol.
Yeah.
Because he was just like this guy that didn't have any hype behind him, a hardworking guy from Brockton, Massachusetts, just blue collar, just always outworked everybody.
Yeah.
And just wouldn't stop. And then when he got to the pinnacle, when he knocked out Thomas Hearns, that fight was just like, that was the fight that made him. And people really understood what kind of greatness that man had in him. Right. I mean, people knew how good he was before that, but you had to see him against another superstar and see him just wade right into the fire to see what Thomas Hearns was a murderous puncher.
Oh, he was a monster.
Murderous puncher. And to see Marvin Hagler just take it and keep coming forward. What a fight. And that was a fight. It was barely a boxing match. Yeah. It was a fight. You know? I mean, they made it a war.
Well, they had that on their hat, right?
Yeah. Yep. That was Hagler. Yeah, he put war on everything.
Yeah.
He was something special, you know. He was an inspiration in Massachusetts, everybody.
I still question
the Leonard decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he won that fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he won that fight. But I did love the fact that he retired. He said, that's it. I'm done. Fuck this sport.
Yeah.
I'm going to Italy and make martial arts movies.
How'd he do? Were they any good? Yeah.
They were terrible. Terrible movies, but he made a lot of money. You know, he was a superstar over there.
Weren't any worse than Dipshit, huh?
Oh, they were worse, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, they were crazy bad. But they were comically bad. They were like, you know, like you'd punch people, they go flying through the air, that yeah. kind of shit. You ever seen?
No.
See if you can find some clips. Jamie's found some clips. They were hilarious movies, you know. But, you know, he decided he didn't want to fight anymore and went out at the very top of his game.
Yeah.
Which is kind of incredible. There's only a few guys have ever done that. Andre Ward did that. He did that. You know, only a few guys ever just went out.
The guy from UFC.
George St. Pierre.
No.
Khabib Nurmagomedov, yeah. Khabib. Yeah, Khabib did it. Yeah, I mean, Khabib, very few guys have ever gotten to the point where Khabib is and decided, I mean, he's in his early 30s.
Right.
Like, this is Marvin Hagler here. So look at this.
All right, look at this. Shooting the bow, they shooting the arrows yeah. at the airplane, or?
I don't know what he was doing, but look at, these are terrible movies.
Indigo, huh? Indigo.
Indio. Oh, yeah. Indio. There's just these, like, silly movies.
I think he's shooting at the roof.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. It's just crazy. They're just Italian movies. But he was a huge star over there. I guess he learned Italian. See, he punches that guy.
Wow.
That guy goes flying through the air.
That's a hell of a hook.
Look at this.
Uppercut. Jeez, that's great.
But
man.
Someone has to do something like that on the early days of Pride. They really do. Because the Pride was something special. Because for us that were watching it at home, all the fans, it wasn't known. It wasn't like everybody, like the UFC today, say if Francis Ngannou's fighting or if Stylebender's fighting, everybody knows. It's big. Right, it's a huge right. sport, you know? You know, you find out the event's coming this weekend, hundreds of thousands, if not a million pay-per-view buys. It's a big deal. But back then, Pride was, no one knew over here.
Yeah.
Only the martial arts fans knew. It wasn't a big deal. But we knew that we were seeing something special.
Well, it was like a Super Bowl every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I'll tell you what, Joe, it was, you know, people say, you know, the Nogueira brothers came over here and got whooped. They say Mirko came over and got whooped. We were busted up, man.
Yeah.
You get in top shape every 3 months to fight, you know, a top guy. You get busted up, and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard on the body to yeah. do something like that.
Yeah, everybody who came over to America had already been past their prime in Pride.
They had already had a career. Nogueira.
Yeah, a full career.
Yeah.
Like, think of Nogueira's wars, the wars yeah. that he had, the war with Fedor. With Crow Cop, with, I mean, so many guys.
Big Bob.
Bob Sapp. Bob was 375 pounds and pile-drived him.
I love Bob, man.
Apparently, Minotaur's neck was fucked up for the rest of his life after that
really?
Fight. Yeah.
I can see that.
Of course.
God
yeah.
dang.
I mean, Bob was 375 with a six-pack, which what in the fuck was he taking?
He, you know what, 5% body fat?
He was so big. He was so big, it seemed like a boss character in a video game.
Yeah.
Like the final guy that you had to beat. You know? I mean, Bob was just gigantic. And he had some skills.
Yeah, and he's the funniest guy.
Was he?
Oh, my God, he's so funny. You know? And then, somebody told me not to say that to you.
That he was funny?
Yeah.
Bob's funny. His character was hilarious.
Oh,
he put the cape on and everything, and they loved him in Japan, boy.
Oh,
they
yeah.
loved him over there. He was a huge superstar over there, right?
Yeah. Then,
But I think that time, that period of time from like 2001 to whenever it was that Pride went away, was like 2006 or something like that.
So, eight, maybe it was 10 years or 8 years.
Look at him and Overeem.
Look at Overeem, yeah. Horse meat.
did they fight?
I don't know. It says versus behind them.
Oh, it is an arm wrestling match.
Okay.
Well, Overeem is back. He's going back to glory. So they're going to let him get back on the secret sauce. We're going to see Alistair Overeem. Yeah, good. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Listen, test all the fighters you have to test, but... When a guy's been saucy all throughout the best parts of his career, and then you make him come over here and be natural. I mean, we got a chance to see him against Brock Lesnar when he was saucy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When he was 265, jacked, built like a superhero. But then, you know, all these pesky USADA tests.
You know what? if every athlete on the planet would tell you so to kiss their fucking ass. Yeah. You know, they go away. They should go away. They have too much power. You know, to bang on somebody's door at 5 o'clock in the morning.
How about when they were about to fight? Like, fight day. They did it to Alexander Volkanovsky.
Really?
Wasn't it him? It was him. Yeah. Literally fight day. These motherfuckers wake him up at 6 o'clock in the morning and tell him to take a piss.
I'd unleash the dogs, man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that is insanity. It's insanity that they would even think that would be okay.
Right.
And it's a huge disadvantage if they don't test his opponent.
Right.
They should test him at the same time. But even first of all, they should leave him the fuck alone.
Yeah.
It's crazy that they did that.
I mean, the psychological fuck that is, yeah. You know.
I mean, he was like, are you fucking kidding me? Are they really here?
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't believe it. I mean, he's just trying to stay calm and get ready for a fight. And when you were fighting in Pride, they tested all. Like
they tested. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But they didn't give a fuck.
We don't know what happened. Yeah. They spilt it on the way to the toilet.
Ensign told me that they had in the contract in all capital letters, we do not test for steroids.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He said they were like. Letting you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it was like UFC 9 when McCarthy came in and said, you can't punch, you know, you close fist.
Right.
Or you will be fined somewhere, sometime, some amount down the road,
right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, go ahead, basically is what he said.
Oh, is that what he said? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you will be fined eventually somewhere, some amount, you know?
Oh, so it was one of those deals.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're gonna enforce this stupid rule, you know? That, you know?
What was it like working in Pride?
I liked it until I found out that, you know, I had been robbed a couple of times and they were supposed to have paid your taxes. And then, you know, I went and did the last show as a favor, you know, and I took a tremendous cut. And, you know, then the next day I go in to get paid and the president of Pride's not there. So, fuck, something's up. And he said, I'm not going to say his name because, you know, it's still questionable everything. So he said, he's not here, he's on the phone. I go, yeah, crap. He says, Don's on yesterday, Japanese IRS come to our office looking for you. He said, they're downstairs right now waiting on you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so I had to go down there and pay my way out of Japan.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of weird shenanigans with money over there, right? That was why Bob Sapp wound up leaving, right? They told him they wanted him to fight and he didn't have a contract.
Yeah.
And the day of the fight, there's still no contract. It's like, look, if I don't have a contract,
right.
I'm not going out there. And then they effectively kind of blackballed him and he never really... reach those same heights again. They stop right. Promoting them, stop, you know.
Well, some asswipe over there made the announcement that, you know, the Yakuza's was involved with Pride. You know, like that's a shocker. I mean, Yakuza's involved with everything.
And that killed
there.
The business over there, right?
Yeah.
Was that like the media did that or a journalist did
that
or something?
Yeah, a journalist, yeah.
Yeah. But everybody knew anyway, right?
Right, right. Yeah. But you're not supposed to...
publicly announce it
right.
Because then advertisers don't want to be involved in it.
Right.
Yeah. And is that what killed the business over
yeah.
there?
Yeah, it destroyed it. Yeah.
So how many years did it run for in its like in its heyday?
I don't know. I did the last one. I don't know if it was 8 or 9. Do you know?
We'll find out.
Because
so it was like a good solid 7 or 8 years.
No, it's more than that. I'm sorry.
Was it?
I'm thinking about myself here. Imagine that. Yeah, because I came in at number 19, right?
Was it?
Yeah, well, 19 or 21.
Well, I remember the first one was Hickson. Hickson fought the very first one. And
yeah.
They used it was Hickson versus Takata, right? Wasn't that number one? I believe so.
Turner, I don't know.
I think that was, because I think the way they launched Pride, I do remember that Hickson was the first one, because the way they launched Pride was by having pro wrestling stars compete in MMA.
Right.
And that was one of the big attractions to Pride, because pro wrestling in Japan back then was gigantic, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the UWF, remember the UWF?
Yeah.
That was like the first creation of Pride, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had their guys shooting on each other sometimes. You know?
Sometimes.
Right.
And sometimes not. Right. What that means for people that don't understand what that means, some of the fights were a work, meaning like you knew who was going to win, you'd worked it out in advance, and some of the fights just turned out to be real fights.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a thing that would happen sometimes in Japan with pro wrestling,
right?
They would just decide that, and sometimes the opponent didn't know.
Right.
And the guy would go out and start throwing haymakers at him and kick him and take him down, stomp him, and you're like, whoa.
Well, it happened here too. I mean, you know, you had Gene LaBelle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who was the muscle for his parents, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and then Roddy Piper was the muscle for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a lot of guys who were in pro wrestling were legit combat sports athletes.
Right.
And some of them were just pro wrestlers. They just got into it just as entertainers. So there was a wide variety. And over in Japan, Takada was kind of, you know, he was a huge superstar over there. But Hickson would not agree to anything other than a real fight. So when you watch that fight, it's very clear. But some of the fights weren't, right?
Right.
And you kind of had to, like, look at it with a discerning eye. Like, you'd see a guy get caught in a heel hook, and you're like, like, that looks a little fishy. Like,
well, I remember after Ken Shamrock and I fought, I went to a WWE show here in Tucson, and The Undertaker, he asked me if that was a work. He says, because you both ended up in a heel hook. And I'm like, well, fuck yeah, we both ended up in a heel hook. You know, we both, he had my foot, and that was the only thing I grabbed. You know, shit.
Yeah.
That was a shoot, buddy.
Yeah, it looked real.
Oh, it, believe me, is real.
Well, Ken was one of the very first guys to really master heel hooks.
Yeah.
And use those in the UFC early on. Remember?
Yeah.
My God.
Well, he, you know, had a hairline fracture in both my freaking ankles. You know,
did he really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you should have seen them. You know, my ex-wife and I, we would usually go from Japan to L.A., you know, but that time we stopped in Hawaii, and my ankles were this big, you know. Just going, if I went the whole way, you know, I wouldn't have been able, I could barely walk off that plane. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, it was a little painful.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah. How many fights did you have over there in Pride?
Not a lot. Maybe, what, six or seven? Yeah.
Something along those lines. Who do you think was your toughest fight over there?
Oh, jeez. Takayama would have to be my toughest fight. I mean, it wasn't the prettiest thing.
But it was the most iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wore me out, you know.
I can only imagine.
I mean, physically and psychologically, I mean, you go, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of frightening, you know.
You said something to me once, I'll never forget this, about the Ken Shamrock fight. You said that, if you want to be honest, both of you left a little bit of yourself in that ring, and you were never the same afterwards.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Never were.
Yeah. There's some of those fights that you think back, and you think back how you were before the fight and how you were after the fight, and they were just so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So much violence, and it's just...
Well, just the preparation, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the psychological preparation sometimes is harder than the physical preparation.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
You have to separate yourself not only from your family, you know, your wife and your kids and your friends, but the whole world. You know, I mean, I completely understand what it's like to come out of prison, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, prison, not jail, but prison for a long time. Because you're or just use, like I said, not to be redundant, but I am, but you completely separate yourself from everything. Everything.
Hmm. When you would prepare for these fights, where were you training at the time?
There in Tucson. A couple of times I had to leave, you know. For the second Mark Coleman fight, you know, I went over and had Frank Shamrock, you know, train.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we couldn't train. I was so beat up, you know, at that point in my career. You know, we'd get up, you know, go have breakfast, go get a massage, go to the chiropractor, you know, get stretched, go to that. It was just hardly any fighting, you know, just watch the fight on TV, you know. I mean, it was all
just trying to keep your body healthy.
Yeah, just to show up, yeah.
Wow. So what kind of, like, physical training were you able to do when you were that banged up?
Not much, you know. I mean, like I said, we would just do stretching and just technique, you know, basically just technique.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you do for conditioning?
Hell, Joe, I don't even remember anymore.
Really?
For that fight, yeah.
Because Shamrock, Frank in particular, was always a stickler for conditioning. Yeah. He was always an amazing cardio.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of his big weapons, is he would put a pace on guys. That's what he did to Tito. That's what he did to John Lober in the rematch. Just put a pace on guys they couldn't keep up with.
Oh, Frank was amazing.
He was forgot about Frank.
Yeah,
he was a beast.
He was an amazing athlete. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when he armbarred Kevin Jackson?
Yeah.
Won the title? Yeah. No, he was a monster.
Yeah. That's one of the things that, you know, I use an example. You know, it was a gold medalist.
Yep.
You know. In the hardest discipline, you know.
And Frank caught him, what, 30 seconds in the first
beautiful,
round?
Just beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and Jackson's a stud.
Oh, yeah. You know. Real stud. Amazing wrestler.
Yeah. Have Super you ever worked out with him?
No.
Stronger than a fucking ox.
Oh, I could only imagine. I mean, all those elite wrestlers, the kind of strength those guys have. Remember when Royce Alger came over to the UFC and Ensign armbarred him? Yeah.
Fast, too.
Yeah, same thing. Caught him in an armbar. Mm-hmm. But so many of your wrestlers, they just didn't understand what they were getting into.
No.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, you know they lead those arms out there, and boom, they're snatched real fast.
So when you were training with Frank, how did you hook up with Frank? How did that take place, and where were you guys training?
Oh, yeah. We were at his house.
Was he in California at the time?
Yes, sir. Yes,
so you went up there and just trained with him?
Yes,
did you camp with him?
Because I, you know, my career going up and down, my marriage had a lot of that. So, you know, I needed to get the hell out of town, you know, because.
I get it.
Yeah, things weren't going good. And.
So how did you make that connection with Frank?
Hell. Trying to figure that one out. If that was the second Coleman fight, so that was after Ken, right? But, you know, I don't know how the hell that happened.
But he...
I called him.
You need some help?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to get out of town. I think because I had fought... the French guy, the first French guy, New Year's Eve.
First French guy, not LeBanner.
No.
Who's the other French guy? French guy. MMA?
Huh?
Shame to pull up his
car. No, he's a kickboxer. And I boogered his eye up real bad, you know.
Who was that? I'm trying to remember.
I think it was
Jamie will find it.
Inoki. I think it was an Inoki show.
Nah, that's wasn't Dynamite, right? So it was.
Yeah, it was a Dynamite show.
Well, that's
right?
Nakao Akabono.
No, he's a white guy. All the way, it's Cyril.
Oh, Cyril Abidi. Oh, that's right. And you got him with a rear naked choke.
Yeah, Noki Mumbai. Yeah.
Man. So back then, when you trained with Frank, the Lion's Den was probably the first real mixed martial arts team where they were like really prepared. Them and Miletic Fighting Systems, right?
Right.
Pat Miletic's place and the Lion's Den. They were two of the very first guys that were really putting together a real legit MMA team where they had like real, like for the time, scientific right. training, real technique training, and real preparing guys for things.
Well, you know, like you said, they had a team.
Yeah.
You know, I had a group of guys, you know. I had the first group of non-white guys. You know, all my guys were Mexican, except for a couple white boys, you know. And
right. Arizona.
Yeah. And they're tough guys, man, loyal. You know, one guy was a former sniper in the SEALs. Another couple guys were former Marines.
And what discipline would those guys have, martial arts wise?
Basically, judo and wrestling.
Judo and wrestling.
But boxing, too. Mm-hmm. So, same thing I had.
So, when you would prepare for a fight back then, did you have like a head trainer that was like.
Steve Owen was my head trainer.
And he would prepare your camps and the whole deal?
Yeah. Steve is amazing. You know, we call him the evil Yoda. You know, he was a great judo guy. Several times national judo champion, a couple time world. I mean, just amazing. And he can look at a fight, you know, 5 minutes of a fight, and boom, have the game plan drawn up.
And so he was one of the. So he was one of the first guys that was. In your camp that like
he was my judo sensei.
Okay.
My first judo sensei was a guy Torres. What the jeez Louise, now I feel like an asshole.
No worries. Now
remember my sensei's name.
It happens.
Kiyoki Torres, or George Torres, but he goes by Kiyoki. You know, he lives in Hawaii now. But Kiyoki was my first, he ran a kid's judo club down there on Fort Huachuca. And so I started going there on Saturday mornings, and Steve would come down. You know, he would work up at Tucson, it'd be Monday, Tuesday, Thursday nights, and then he'd come down Saturday morning for the kids, you know, but the rest is up at Tucson, so I would drive up there, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday night. I'd go up there and train and then jump in the truck and drive home, you know, get home at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, because I would always feed my guys, you know, after we worked out, I'd take them out for dinner, you know, and a couple of beers for me, you know.
Even in training?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Up until like the fight?
Oh, night before, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you and Cowboy Cerrone.
Yeah. And
Cowboy still does that. He keeps drinking.
Yeah, I mean, the one of the worst, I lost to a fucking idiot I shouldn't have lost to because my wife at the time decided I was drinking too much and taking too many pills. So her and a couple of the guys took my booze and my pills the night before the fight. And I started going through withdrawals during the fucking fight.
No.
Yeah.
That was something someone told me the other day that I could not believe. They were telling me, and I don't want to name any names, but big time fighters, particularly kickboxers, that fought on heroin.
Really?
That fought on pills. That fought on opiates.
Yeah, I did that. And that's when my career went to shit.
Yeah. And it was just because of all the pain that you were in, right? I mean, you said that by the time of Cyril Abiti fight, you were already banged up to the point where you could barely train.
Yeah.
But you think about how long your career went after that. It's crazy. I mean,
Was a Coleman fight.
Oh, it was a Coleman fight.
Yeah, it was so fucked up. remember I met Frank. Frank had trained Cyril for a fight me, and then I called Frank to train me for the Coleman fight. You know,
but you had a lot of fights even after that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. You rolled that motherfucker till the wheels fell off.
Yeah. The frame fell off, man.
The frame, as yeah.
You seen the frame.
Exactly. They had to redo your frame.
Yeah, frame of restoration, yeah.
Right down to the bare chassis. So when your last fight was what, 2011? Somewhere along that?
Yes, sir. It was
kind of crazy.
5 months after my fifth back surgery.
Wow. 5 months after your fifth back surgery, you had a fight.
Yeah, stupid. Fucking stupid.
But you still want to do it right now. The thing about guys like you, it's like you never lose the itch.
Right.
It's your body just fails you.
Yeah.
And the tougher the guy, the more the body starts to fall apart because you're willing to train through pain.
Mm-hmm.
You look at guys like, Cain Velasquez is a great example. One of the greatest of all times, but his body just couldn't hang in there. His knees blew out, his back blew out, his neck blew out, his shoulders blew out. He had all these surgeries, and eventually he just stopped being the guy that everybody knew was Cain. You know, his body just wouldn't do what his mind could do.
Yeah, you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, you learn that in amateur wrestling, though.
Yeah.
You know, you learn to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, I think I first broke my neck when I was in college and didn't know it. I thought I'd fucked up my shoulder, you know.
Because it was shooting down your shoulder?
Yeah. Yeah. And so what happened was Dan Severn's little baby brother Rod and I, we were roommates, and we went down to my parents' house for Thanksgiving or something. Anyways, we were out on those fucking three-wheelers.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's
how
you did it?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Drinking and going over and you know, last jump of the day.
Oh,
ended
no.
up being the last jump. you know, we've been there for a couple of hours, gone through a few cases of beer, and truck pulls up. And they get out, you know, look at the little sissies, you know, because they had the shoulder pads, the knee pads, the gloves, you know,
right.
All that, and, you know, laughing at them. And so then I go off, jump front tire first, boom, boom, boom.
Oh,
boom.
No.
Yeah, so I thought I tore up my shoulder, but 20 years later when they did my neck, the guy said, when'd you break your first? When the first time you broke your neck, you know,
and you didn't know you'd ever broken your neck.
No, I didn't know. But I wrestled, you know. I kept. That was in 86, 87, and then I sat out a year in amateur wrestling because of the injury. Because
of your neck?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought it was the shoulder, but it was the neck. But. And then I rehabbed it, you know, and because they redid the shoulder. They cut off the interclavicle bone back then. It was how they would solve shit.
What did they do?
Cut off the end of my clavicle bone.
They cut off the end of it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because it was just destroyed, so they just lob it off, throw it away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? Holy shit.
And
that's early 90s surgeries?
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
80s.
80s?
At the end of the 80s. And then, jeez, freaking ways.
Kurt Angle wrestled in the Olympics with a broken neck, didn't he?
Yeah.
He won the gold medal with a broken neck.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. There's no one tougher than wrestlers.
Yeah. I know fuck. They fixed the shoulder, cut off the, it was the right shoulder, I think. And, yeah, it was the right shoulder. And so they put me, Bobby Douglas put me on a medical scholarship, you know, so it would open up a scholarship for the team. Which is what needed to be done. And so then I rehabbed it through 87. And then partway through 88, you know, I went up and, you know, working out with the team and all that, but I went up to the Las Vegas Southwestern Regional Qualifying Tournament for the Olympics. And I won that in Greco and freestyle. And then I went to, which made you, qualified you for the national finals, you know. And so then I went up there for the Greco and got my ass handed to me. You know, I thought, you know, you get lucky every once in a while and you think you're good at it. But they wouldn't let me go to the freestyle. You know, they said pick one or the other. And like a dumbass, I picked the wrong one, you know. But I ended up taking fifth. I think I took fifth that year, fifth or sixth in the national freestyle tournament, you know. Must have been six, because they took the first five. And always a bridesmaid, you know?
Right.
Art Martori, you know, was the money guy back then, you know, for the Olympic team, almost.
So when
Art's
did,
a great guy.
So with all the injuries, when did you first start taking pain medication?
Oh, fuck. You know, the first time was in 96, you know.
So this was during the UFC days?
Yeah.
Because that was, UFC 8 was what? Was that 96?
That was February 96. And then, let's see. Crap, Joe. What the hell?
Do you remember when you started fighting on him?
No, that was a fucking mistake when that was. Well, what happened, I heard something in the UFC. I broke my hand, right? Or Coleman. Coleman beat the hell out of me. Remember Coleman beat the hell out of me in UFC 10?
Yeah.
And so then he broke my ocular, I think it is, or occipital, I don't know. And then something else happened. Anyways, then I fought. Mark Hall was my first fight that night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was offered a fight against him in Japan in November, right before, you know, November 96. And Bob Meyerowitz found out that I was going to do that and that Dan was going to do that, you know. And he was pissed because he had the opportunity of ruining the Ultimate too.
Right.
And I says, come on, Bob. It's Mark Hall, you know. Come on. And
Mark Hall was undersized, right?
Yeah.
Smaller guy.
Yeah, he's a
tough guy.
Buck 85. He's a fucking idiot. Are you kidding
me? Was he?
Yeah, he's an idiot.
I didn't know.
Fucking
idiot. I don't know him at all.
You'd want to slap him upside the head if you did. Well, the fucking guy is going around saying that, you know, he took a dive.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, against me at the Ultimate, you know, second round. You know, fuck him.
Oh.
I'd already beat him twice. He would be the last person in there I wanted to take a dive. You know, but so I beat Gary Goodridge, you know, in the first round of Ultimate. And a buddy of mine, Dave Nortz, he had gone with me from the fire department. He was a paramedic, okay? So he hits me up with a line, you know. We put two or three bags after the Goodridge fight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Which, boom, you know.
Fired you right back up.
Probably right back, fresh as a daisy, you know. And so then I beat Hall, boom, you know, fast. I mean, Tank knocks out his guy, you know. And so, God damn, he's dead. He broke his neck, you know. You hear all these Alabama guys, you know.
Was that Steve Nelmark?
Yeah.
That was a crazy KO.
That was fucking nuts.
That was a wild one. Tank could fucking crack.
Oh, man. It was like one of those puppets, you know? Somebody just cut the strings.
Yep.
And we could just fold it back on
that
themselves.
Was one of the great KOs of those days.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
It was.
I didn't see it. So.
And then it was you and Tank in the finals?
Yep. Tank and I in the finals.
Yeah,
right.
And you got his back.
Yeah.
A crazy war, then you got his back and finished him.
Well, fuck. I mean, stupid ass me. You know, I walk out, lumber out there, and step sideways, heel. What happens when you stand on your heels, Joe?
You get knocked backwards.
You get knocked on your ass.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be. And stupid ass, I don't know what the hell I was thinking, you know, heel. But as soon as that second heel landed, he hit me, you know, with a jab.
Yeah.
So, boom, boom, boom.
Hard jab, though.
Yeah.
That motherfucker, kid, everything he did was hard.
Damn right. You know, he was like.
You want to talk about a guy who could drink?
Yeah.
I made a mistake of drinking with him one night, him and his buddies at the bar.
Yeah.
Tank had put him away. I remember one time I was there for, I forget which event was, but there was a giant brawl that broke out right after I went to bed. I left everybody. Everybody was downstairs in the after fight area, hanging out, drinking. And it was getting late, so I was like, well, I'm going to go to bed. So I went upstairs to go to bed, and then I heard, like, you just missed it.
Yeah.
Apparently, Valid Ishmael and Tank got into a brawl, and there was just chairs flying and all kinds of crazy shit, and I missed it by, like, 20 minutes.
Fucking Brazilians here, they'd fight at the drop of a hat.
Drop of a hat.
Yeah, fuck. I mean, I remember over here in Pride having breakfast, you know, couple of times they almost got right next to my table.
Like, yeah.
Guys, I'm fucking eating here, you know?
Start brawling.
Well,
there's so many brawls back then, right? Charles Crazy Horse Bennett and Vanderlei Silva brawled backstage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legendary fights backstage. And someone should do a documentary on Pride. They really should. Because it was just a fucking crazy time in martial arts history. And it was also a time when Fedor was in his prime.
Yeah.
And I think it's arguable that Fedor in his prime was the greatest heavyweight of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's between my mind, it's hard to say because, you know, like Fabricio Werdum beat both him and Kane, right? But I think he caught Fedor when Fedor was battle worn and was pretty deep into his career. And also, there was testing over in America. There wasn't testing in Japan.
Right.
You know, and then the same thing with Kane. When Fabricio caught Kane had already gone through, it had been a pretty long, extensive career. But it's arguable that when he, like when he fought Krokop, when he fought Nogueira, when he fought all those guys over there, it was arguable that Fedor was the greatest.
Well, Fedor was the greatest. There's no reason to even fucking talk about it, you know? I mean, it's simple. If you ever watch the man fight live, It was something you'll never forget, you know? I mean, those things over there, they were events. They weren't just a fight, you know, you go to, you know, on a Saturday night, hey, let's go watch the fight, you know? They were fucking events. They were, like I said, Super Bowl every 3 months.
Yep.
The women would get dressed up. The men would, you know, I mean, you plan your whole fucking week around it, you know?
Yeah.
They'd go out and have their dinner, you know, steak dinner, you know, not beer on the back of the pickup, you know?
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. We used to get up in the morning and watch them because they were live from Japan. So they'd be on here, like, I forget what it was.
Five in the morning.
Something crazy like that. Yeah. And we would watch them live.
Yeah, you never went to a Pride?
No, I missed it. They offered me a gig commentating at one point. Yeah, they came to meet me in, I forget where it was, one of the UFC events, back when I was doing the interviews. And they offered me a gig to commentate in Pride. And I was like,
oh, man.
Yeah, fucked up. I should have done it at least once.
Who owned the UFC, Bob?
That was Bob. Bob did back in the day, yeah.
Bob was such a good guy, but he did not like you going anywhere or doing anything else, you know. He was a good man, but he was solid on loyalty, you know. And he felt, you know, that you're betraying him.
Mm.
you know, which is probably the truth at the time, you know.
Well, there was so much competition, and there was only, I mean, the UFC was the big thing in America, but Pride was way bigger than the UFC back then.
Yeah.
In terms of size. It wasn't even close.
No.
UFC was doing small places in comparison to what Pride was doing.
Well, it was that fucking McCain.
Yep. You know? Yeah.
He was choking him out.
And then when Zuffa bought the UFC, when the Fertittas and Dana White came along, then they had the business plan, and then they had the money.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, I mean, they were real close to bailing.
Yeah.
At one point in time, they were $40 million in debt.
Yeah.
Which is just nuts.
Crazy.
That was right when the Ultimate Fighter came along, and they had actually talked to Dana on the phone and said, let's try to sell it. And Dana was going to sell it. They were going to start putting out offers and try to see, you know, who wanted to buy the UFC. And then I guess Fertitta changed his mind. I guess they just decided, listen, we'll wait it out. And then they did the Ultimate Fighter, and then boom, it takes off. But apparently, they were literally at the, like, they were thinking about putting out the offers, and he actually made the phone call and decided to, Lorenzo did, to Dana. And Dana was ready to sell it. And then they changed their mind last minute, and then boom, look what it is now. It's kind of wild, because if they sold it, who the fuck knows what would have happened.
Right.
I would have quit for sure. I would have stopped doing commentary. They probably would have, you know, they would have had to have somebody that had a lot of media savvy, that knew how to market the company and try to rebrand it or something. And they probably would have sold it, and they probably would have lost a lot of money too, because before the Ultimate Fighter in 2005, it wasn't really worth that much money.
You know? No.
But then when the Ultimate Fighter happened and Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin fought live on TV and they had that crazy fucking brawl, and then it became popular.
Yeah.
That one fight made the sport. It's wild in a lot of ways. That was a defining moment. Didn't make the sport, but it was a defining moment for the sport. Defining moment for the sport in America.
Right.
But meanwhile, in Japan, at the same time, they were doing the Saitama Super Arena.
Yeah.
Huge events, gigantic, spectacular crowds, 50, 60,000 people. It was wild.
Oh, man.
The walk-ins and that the crazy pride lady that would introduce everybody. Her introductions were legendary.
Oh, fucking funny. The first time I fought, she called me Dan.
Did she? That's funny.
Can I get a cup of coffee?
Yeah, sure. Here I go.
Water. Oh, fuck.
What do you want?
Coffee.
Here we go.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry, gentlemen.
No worries.
Thank you. I didn't know.
It's right here.
This is my water here?
Yeah.
Thank you.
When you think back, I mean, what a crazy life you've lived. I mean, you lived like a movie life, you know?
Yeah, nobody would believe it.
They wouldn't believe it. If it wasn't a movie, it would be a crazy, spectacular movie. For you to go from being a guy who's shoeing horses and working in a fire department, all of a sudden you decide, I could do that, and you take a fight. The next thing you know, well, I guess I'm fighting now.
Yeah.
To all the way to Japan to kickboxing Jerome LeBanner and fighting in these giant arenas and doing New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's a crazy life you've lived, Don Fry.
It was a fun one. It was a fun one. And then half the time I'm done, you know. I got my bulldog, Quinn, and if it wasn't for her, I'd have went, you know. She's the only reason I'm here now.
Your bulldog?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. My kids are grown, you know. They don't have time for me, you know. They're good girls, beautiful, smart, you know, but, you know, they're 20, 21.
They have their life.
Yeah.
When you think back on all the damage that it did to your body, if you had to go back and do it all again, would you do it again?
Bet your sweet ass.
I knew you were going to say that.
I want to do it now if Columbia works out for me.
Yeah, right. When you see the fighters today and you know that you're a gigantic part of the evolution of the sport, I mean, you're a pioneer. You were there in the early days. When you see what it's like now, it's got to be pretty crazy to see and know that you were a vital part of the beginning of this thing.
You know, I really don't understand what you're saying about, you know, about being a vital part and being...
You were one of the legends, man. You're like, if you go back and look at the legends of the sport, Don Fry, you're one of the legends, man. Whether you believe it or not, you're one of the fucking OGs. When I told my friends that I was having you on the podcast today, people were like, oh, shit. They were so excited. People were pumped. People fucking love you, man. They love you because you are you. You are 100% authentic. You wear your heart on your sleeve. You don't bullshit. You're a fucking real man. You're the real deal, Don Fry.
Thanks, partner.
It's not a lot of people like you.
Yeah. Probably good call.
I mean, think about it. Like, what you've done in your life, there's not a lot of humans that would have followed your path. Very few people.
No, they go for the easy route. I'm not very smart enough to take the easy route.
How many of those fights do you think you fought when you were on the pain pills?
Oh, shit, Joe. After Shamrock, everyone.
All of them, huh?
Yeah.
You just had to?
Yeah, I had no choice, you know. Yeah, my body was so beat up. And then, you know, being a dumbass, you think, okay, I live on these things. I train on these things, you know. I can fight on these things.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
I think there was a lot of people doing that, though. That's right. What my friend was telling me the other night. He was telling me, look, man, you don't know, but I'm telling you, a lot of those guys were fighting on heroin. They're fighting on opiates.
I never did the heroin.
But opiates, pain pills, it's the same thing. It's, you know, it's opiates.
Yeah, I did that. What was that shit Kerr was on?
Oxycontin?
No. The
Percocets?
The injectable. Vicodins.
Oh, injectable. Well, I don't know what that is. From the smashing machine?
Yeah.
That movie was a wake-up call for a lot of people, huh?
Yeah. I never saw the thing.
It's crazy.
I saw bits and pieces, but...
It's a crazy fucking documentary.
Yeah.
And they caught him. You know, that wasn't the purpose of that film. The purpose of that film, when they started making that documentary, was when Mark Kerr was in his prime, and what a fucking specimen that guy was, right?
Right, right.
And they wanted to document this guy who was this fucking elite super athlete wrestler who was the smashing machine. He was just, that's what they nicknamed him over there, and he was just killing everybody. And during the process of filming it, they realized, like, wow, this guy's addicted to pain medication.
Mm-hmm.
And he was real open about it, and he showed them everything. And then you got to see they caught him during the filming, right when the wheels were falling off. So it was just complete dumb luck that documentary became sort of a cautionary tale.
Yeah, I know that back then around that time, some Hollywood producer came out to the house and he wanted to do... one of those shows, you know, but I was just, my body was starting to fall apart so bad, and I'm like, I don't know how much longer I'm gonna be able to keep this going.
Yeah,
and I, you know, the kids were little, you know, one and two, or less than that, and I didn't want these people in my house,
right?
You know, because you know, just had the kids, and then. Like you said, the wheels were falling off, man, and I knew things were about to go to shit, you know, but I didn't want to tell anybody that.
Right? Did anybody know other than your trainers?
Yeah.
Did your wife know?
I don't know.
Yeah. When did you were you thinking you weren't going to be able to do this much longer? Were you trying to figure out something else to do with your life?
Oh, of course.
But it's hard for fighters, especially when you're making that much money, right?
Yeah. And that's all you know.
Right.
I mean, all I've known is physical. You know, fireman, horseshoer, you know, or farrier, you know, fighter. Everything was physical, and then, you know, you're about to lose it all.
Yeah.
You know, and you know you're about to lose it all.
Right. Yeah, that's the untold story of fighters before and after their careers. You know, during camps, all you see is the fights.
Yeah.
Everybody sees the fights, and the fights are amazing. But most people have no idea the kind of pain and injury guys are going through just with almost every camp.
Yeah. Just shit, Joe. You know, I wake up at 6 in the morning now, and it takes me 6 hours to to get beyond the kitchen, you know.
Does it?
Yeah, you know. I'm getting better. I've made it outside a couple of times, you know, before noon.
Wow. And what kind of medications do they have you on to deal with all this?
Now I'm on morphine. Hydromorphone, I think it's duloxetine, and then and morphine, you know. And it's not enough, but I don't want to go, you know. I haven't had a drink since September of 2016.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I ain't gonna lie to you, I'd like to have one.
So yeah. Was the problem with the drinking with the pills?
Well, you know, that's what my ex-wife claimed. But yeah, shit, I didn't think it was that bad, but you know, I mean,
you're a fucking animal, though.
I don't remember what happened, you know.
Yeah,
when you get to taking the pills and the alcohol, you're not always knowing what you're saying. See, I insulted a lot of people, you know, but it wasn't my words. It was words that I didn't create. I was like repeating shit I had heard, you know?
Right. Because you're just out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it wasn't something that was, you know, just like, I don't hate anybody.
Right.
But, you know, when you're pilled up and you're drunk, you spew a lot of hatred.
Right.
You know?
Especially when you're constantly in pain, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, fuck, you're miserable. Just being a miserable prick.
Are you constantly in pain right now?
No, just 90% of the time.
So not constantly.
No, there's a good 10% there. Yeah.
So even sitting here, like with this thing that you have on your chest, is this like a back support?
It's supposed to be on my belly, yeah. It's like,
what does that thing do?
Just
like a weightlifting belt?
Yeah, a heavy-duty belt. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's just big in the back, you know. It looks like Ric Flair's championship belt, you know.
And just to keep everything together?
Yeah, support it, you know, give it strength, yeah.
But even with all the pills, you're still in pain.
Oh, yeah.
So what do the pills do? Just take a little bit of the edge
off. They knock the edge off so that you can get going, you know. Fuck Joe. Like I said, first surgery was May 2010. You know, things went really bad in 2008. You know, my father passed away, and I could only walk 40 steps. You know, it would take me half an hour to get out to the barn to feed the horses. You know, I'd go 40 steps, sit down, 40 steps, sit down.
The crazy thing is, how many times did you fight after that? You fought at least twice after that.
Yeah. Fuck, I fought. I don't know. You got the card.
The record. You fought when you had been in that condition. That's really crazy.
Really stupid.
Well, you're a wild motherfucker, man. I would expect nothing less. What are you doing with yourself these days?
You got to feed the family. You know?
I understand. I understand. Your toxic masculinity shirt.
Yeah. What that?
Dan and Don's toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Is that you and...
Mr. Severn.
Severn? What are you guys doing with that? What is this shirt?
We have a podcast.
Do you really?
Yes, sir.
What's
it
on? It's on everything? Apple, all that jazz?
Partner beats the hell out of me, huh?
There it is. Dan and Don's Toxic Masculinity Podcast. How is Dan doing?
Dan's doing great. And Dan's amazing, man.
He's got some wild stories, too. I want to get him in here as well.
You got to. Dan,
I have to.
I mean, because he was there at the beginning.
The very beginning, you know?
You got to get him.
He was UFC 2, right, wasn't he?
No, I think 4.
4?
4 or 5.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I came in 8. I think that was, all right, this thing started in 93. but actually 94 because there's only one event in 93.
Right.
You know.
And that one is hard. It was hard to find back in the day. They don't, I think there's something going on with the rights to it. So the first one I saw was in 94. I watched a videotape of it.
Yeah.
I got it from a videotape store. Back in the days when you have like Blockbuster Video and shit like that. Yeah.
I still got a couple of VHS tapes.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't know if, I think I may have one or two that's not even opened yet. Yeah.
Wow. They're probably worth a lot of money.
You think so?
Yeah. Fucking eBay. Those are classics now. If they're not even opened, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet you could eBay the shit out of them, especially if you sign it.
I got a couple of my T-shirts, original T-shirts. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And then I've got a couple of the programs.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. I'll have to find one. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, please do.
What was funny was the program from Ultimate 2. You know, I mean, back then it was... like on paper, you know, 8.5 by 11 paper,
yeah.
And they just take down the Xerox machine, you know,
yep.
And then staple it up and hand it out.
Yep.
And that was it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fucking funny. But going back to Ultimate 2, see, I didn't want to fight Mark Hall, you know, because I had already beat him twice, and... I knew there was going to be bullshit involved. I just knew there was going to be bullshit involved.
How so?
Because we had the same manager, you know? And like why fighting three times in a fucking row?
Right.
I wanted to fight, there's a black guy whose name was Ty Bowden.
Ty Bowden.
Yeah, I don't know if that was really Ty Bowden, you know. I don't know if that's his real name or not, but he had a, for his photo, he had a karate gi guy with his head cut out and taped on, there glued on. I says, I want to fight that guy. And they're like, no, you can't. You already beat a black guy. if you beat two black, you're gonna look racist. I'm like, come on.
Who said that? Your manager?
No, I don't know who said that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
It's one of those stupid fucking things that, you know, you believe now, you know, but not 20 years ago.
I wish someone was filming all those events back then.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They were in these weird little rickety arenas, and it was so strange back then. It was like, I remember the first one I did, which was in Dothan.
Yeah.
I remember even being there while it was happening. I'm like, this is the crazy, the fact that I'm even here, this is the craziest thing ever. You had to fly in propeller planes.
Yeah.
You had to do it in these weird towns where they let it happen because it was mostly illegal in most of the states in the country.
Well, look what happened to Kevin Randleman. You know, he slipped on a pipe.
Yeah, and fell and banged his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how dirty does an arena have to be that you fall on pipes?
Yeah, he slipped on a pipe and fell and banged the back of his head off the ground and couldn't fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he knocked himself out, unfortunately. Yeah.
And you know how hard it was to knock out Randleman?
Yeah, right?
I think he was the most athletic competitor ever be in the UFC.
He was a tremendous athlete.
Yeah.
Tremendous. He was so fast. Remember when he knocked out Krokop in Pride?
Yeah.
Nobody saw that coming.
No.
I mean, Krokop was one of the most elite strikers of all time. And Randleman was such a powerful wrestler that he was worried about the shot. He faked the shot and came in with a left hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Randleman was an amazing athlete.
Amazing.
I think he was the greatest athlete ever be in the UFC.
Do you ever see the holes that guy, the staph infections that guy had?
Yeah, but I don't remember.
Oh my God, they were crazy. He took photos of them, put them online. He had holes in his like armpit area where you could see all the muscle tissue, like it was wide open.
Oh,
it was so nasty that the staph had gotten through his skin and left these big abscesses. Like, I'm talking 3-4 inch holes. Like Jamie, see if you can find it because it's one of the most fucked up things. You have to see it. Like, a lot of folks don't know how bad staph infections can get. I always show them Kevin Randleman's injuries. Look at that. Look at that hole. Look how bad that is. Crazy, right?
Did they ever close up?
Yeah, they've closed up, but, I mean, he died young. I mean, it had to contribute.
Yeah, look at his knee. Is that his knee over there in the bottom?
Somebody else's knee.
It's somebody else's knee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another horrible staph infection. Staph is some scary fucking shit.
It is nasty. Yeah. I had that. Yeah. Like I said, jeez. I don't know which surgery it was, but I...
The back.
Yeah. And... Jeez, fucking least, Joe. What the hell? I know that it had gotten in the surgeon that did my first replacement. He was from South Korea. He was a Harvard graduate, you know, put himself through college, you know, going to Harvard. And he said he almost vomited.
Wow.
You know, during the surgery.
Jesus,
you know?
Christ.
And then that was, and then that was in 10 or 11. No, that was 12 or 13. And then the one that was in my spinal cord the second time, that was in 17 or 18, you know, in Tucson.
That's one of the biggest problems with surgeries, right? Those infections.
Yeah. And they were like, yeah, we got you just in time. You know, what's fucked up about the whole thing was that they had put me in. The first doctor didn't believe it. They couldn't find anything, you know. So they put me in an old folks home, you know, where you go to die, basically.
Really?
Yeah. And, fuck. And I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning just screaming because the pain medication would wear off. And... Yeah, I'd wake up screaming, you know, so I need some pain medication. And they go, you're not due for another 2 hours. Turn off the light, close the door, go down the hall.
Oh, my God.
And I'd be screaming. And I'd call up my buddy Jeff. You got to get me out of here. You got to get me. And so I finally got hold of the fire department. They came down to get me. I'm screaming, this is the infection in my spinal cord. And I, yeah, fuck, I, you know, and the guy's like, you don't quit cussing, I'm going to decline to take you.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, what? And I look at this captain. I says, you're kidding me, right? And he says, no. I says, when I was a fire department, we put up with all kinds of fucking cussing and all that. He says, things have changed, man. You know?
Jesus.
Yeah, and I was this close to buying the farm.
Wow. You know? So the doctor just missed the infection. Just
yeah.
Didn't. And so then they finally get you in.
They got in there, and they said my spinal cord was all lumpy and swollen and all that. And then they just kind of poked it, and
all
the stuff come out. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
So this jackass fucking paramedic, you know, didn't want to take me because I was cussing.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a life you've had, Don Fry. What a life.
If I had the money, I'd get a lawyer and go after him. Yeah. And then, or whoop his ass. Just give me 5 minutes in the ring with him. That's all.
So how often are you doing this podcast with Dan now?
Excuse me, sir. That it's gone down to, I think it's been 3 weeks now. We were supposed to do it every week, and then Dan went back to Michigan. Dan owns an island.
He does?
Oh yeah, one of the lakes there, you know. So he went back there to redo his cabin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So he's got a small island that you have to row your boat out to?
Yeah, nice. Yeah. A little 1 acre place, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, that's cool. A 1 acre island.
Yeah, that's sweet?
That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'm envious of him, man. I'm happy for him.
That guy had how many MMA fights? He must have had 100.
He's had over 100, yeah.
Crazy.
And the thing is, he's got him and there's three guys had over 100 fights, but
Jeremy Horn.
Yeah, him and Jeremy have winning records,
which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, the other guy does.
Shannon the Cannon.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to say his name. Yeah, but
only said one part of it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Don, we got some barbecue for you. So
right, we're tired talking to me. Yeah.
No, you're great, man. But I know you got to be hungry. I know you eat every hour.
Yeah, shit.
It's been a pleasure, sir. I really appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
You're awesome,
Rich,
man.
Rich, I wanted to bring Rich because, you know, when we go to a fight, I get tunnel vision, you right. know. So I only, you know, concentrate on 25-30% of what's going on. You know, Rich is taking care of the other 70%, you know, Rich or Steve or somebody, you know. So you're missing 70% of the story.
No, listen, what I got was gold. What I got was gold.
I'm telling you, though, Rich has got some good shit.
All right, well, I'll talk to him sometime,
too. You're going to have to come out to my house, man.
All right, I would love to. Which part of Arizona you at?
Tucson.
But next time I'm in Tucson, I'll come out. I do gigs out there sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I'm in North Tucson, only like an hour away from Phoenix.
Okay.
Mesa.
I'll make that happen.
Tempe, yeah.
All right.
That'd be great.
Don, you're the fucking man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Appreciate you very much, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Don Fried, ladies and gentlemen.